The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
You're listening to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, and there isn't a Doom Patrol comic at the moment, so that's why we're waiting, and we're talking about the Doom Patrol while we wait.
Yes. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter, at AvantGarve. You can also reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can also find us on Tumblr these days now, too. Woohoo! How fancy are we? And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com. And don't forget, you can also check out our fellow podcast brothers and sisters on InnerCircleComics.com.
Yeah, I mean, we listen to them. I don't know if they listen to us. I mean, no one ever mentions us by name directly. So. No,
it's a bit sad, really.
It is a bit sad. Are we on Tinder?
Maybe.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah, I'm not sure if people Pinterest? Are swiping in the right direction, though. But anyway.
Yeah. Wilfred's been busy lately. Maybe that's what he's been up to.
Maybe.
Maybe. I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at @reading_hicks. And Wilfred is the Twitter show, our show account that's sentient. Mm. And that's at WFDpod. This week we're doing Grant Morrison Doom Patrol, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Grant Morrison wrote the Doom Patrol for a while, so we're getting in the middle of that.
Yes.
Issues 37 and 38.
Mm.
Yeah.
But before that, how's your week in comics and stuff been, Paul?
Oh, yeah, no, it's good. I read March Book 2 by John Lewis and Nate Powell. And boy, that's some heavy stuff. It's sort of the true story of a young man involved in the civil rights movement in the 60s when shit was getting real. So, yeah. And then for some reason I watched The Blind Side and The Help at the same on the same weekend. So
wow.
I had a theme unexpectedly. Yeah.
Wow. Okay then.
Yeah. Cool. What about you, Mike?
I'm fairly busy with study I'm doing through my workplace. I had a very light week of comics last week. A couple of annuals like Batman and Green Lantern. Sandman Overture finally finished. It was only 6 issues, but my God, it took forever. So that was interesting. And now, of course, I have to go back and reread the entire thing just to figure out what the hell was going on. But I've also finally started putting some effort into reading my ever-growing pile of Detective Comics back issues. So
Yeah. That's
been awesome fun seeing stuff that I've never read before and, you know, sharing that with friends online. And they're going, yeah, man, it's Breyfogle art. That's awesome. So that's been interesting to read that and see other people's reactions to me reading it as well. So I've just dealt with bats facing off against the Corrosive Man. I'd never seen before. So
that's they're good issues, those.
Yes, and some guy called Cadaver, who appears to have a death wish, or you know, morbid curiosity about death and ways to die.
Yeah, no, he's pretty fun.
Yeah, so some really cool stuff there. So it's been a fun read. So yeah, and I've got other stuff on the way from the mail. I managed to find a decentish copy of Detective number 250, I think it is,
wow,
from about 1952. So apparently it's in good condition. So I'm a little bit excited.
Too many pages.
Well, hopefully it won't have, you know, subscription forms cut out of it like one of my old issues had. That was a bummer. But yeah, I'm excited for this week. This week is apparently going to be huge and gigantic in comics because Marvel is starting to bring out its all new, all different stuff, even though Secret Wars hasn't actually finished yet. Secret Wars 6 comes out this week, and it's had a ninth issue added to the story, and they're already starting to bring out the new Amazing Spider-Man, the new Avengers sneak peek book, I guess you'd call it. So, well played, Marvel.
That's how they do it.
All new, all delayed, according to some comments I've seen online. So, Hey, is that a clock?
That does sound like a clock.
It's got to be the Doom clock.
Oh, I hope it's not a bomb.
Okay, so we look at the face of the Doom clock. We can see that, as per usual, the final issue of a Doom Patrol series we had was issue 22 of volume 5, the Giffen Clark run, which went on sale May 4th of 2011. It was cover dated July 2011, so it's been 4 years and 22 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book.
That's gosh.
Sad. That's almost, we're getting up to like, what, 4.5 years almost.
Yep.
It's like a toddler. The last appearance of the team, however, was only 8 weeks ago in two different comics. All-Star Section 8, number 3, in which the team had a cameo in the background of a large scene of all the Justice League heroes meeting up. And also in Justice League United, number 12, the team had a one-panel appearance as Stargirl was getting Robot Man to join her for the JLU's next mission. And a reminder to all our listeners who, you know, went out and bought JLU 12, that the next issue is out next week. October 14 or 15, depending on which country you live in. I think we might get a certain hashtag the whole patrol, fired up once again for that.
Ooh.
Just in case, because we never know. The team might actually appear in that one, maybe.
Robot Man definitely will.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely Robot Man. So that'll be cool. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about that next week. And this week in Doom Patrol history, on sale October 6, 2010, for the price of US $2.99, and cover dated December 2010, was issue 15 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark era. And the story was titled A House Divided, in which the chief had gone mad with power. And guess what? It was Kryptonian powers. So in the preceding issue, he'd managed to splice some Kryptonian DNA into his body. So the chief was flying around and basically trying to take over the world. So he's gone mad, and it was up to Cliff, Rita, and Larry to try and stop him. But he was doing things that kind of meant to help the world, because he was doing stuff like confiscating all the weapons in the world and hiding them in the Antarctica. So... I'm sure he meant well. It's just he did him in a typical chiefy kind of way.
Wow. Yeah. That was a spin out of New Krypton, if I remember correctly.
I think so, yeah.
Because there are a lot of Kryptonians wandering around.
Yes. Fun time. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week. So in Doom's planning this week, we are looking at issues 37 and 38 from Volume 2. 37 came out on August 28th, 1990, cover dated October 1990, for the cover price of $1.50 for 32 pages. Holy jeez. Those were the days.
Yeah.
So the writer, of course, was Grant Morrison. Pencils were by Richard Case. Mark McKenna did the inks. John E. Workman Jr. did the letters. And Daniel Vozzo was a colorist. And Art Young was the editor. Now, fair warning, Grant Morrison... gets really Grant Morrison-y in this storyline. So you've all been warned. It'd be really interesting to know what Grant was doing behind the scenes back in these days. But anyway, let's get on with it. So Doom Patrol 37 opens with literally a recap page. Literally the 90% of the page is a recap of everything that's gone before, with a nice border showing the team and the people that they've met. And it gets us up to speed with what's been happening in the previous issues, where they met up with the Men from Nowhere, and they fought. They met the former crime fighter Flex Mentallo, and Cliff is also bringing Niles up to speed on their encounter with these people as well, when they were fighting on Danny the Street.
Yeah, when this issue came out, there was a big promotional push to get people on board with Doom Patrol, because it had been successful, so they really pitched this issue as a jumping on point. So I remember it had a feature in Direct Currents, which is the DC free magazine that came out every month. So, yeah, there was definitely, it was a big deal, this one, trying to get people, as you know, it's a good starting point for them to pick up if they hadn't been reading prior to this.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
I wonder how successful that was. So anyway, Cliff and Niles are walking down a hallway in the headquarters, and they're on the way to check in on the recently reawakened Rhea. Oh, God, how's that for alliteration? And as they're heading towards her room, Cliff is feeling a magnetic pull around his body. And as they enter, they discover that Rhea is indeed alive and well, but she's completely changed. She has weird, sparkling energy coming out from the side of her head. She has a gigantic eye in the center of her chest. She's completely nude as well. So, yep. And her magnetic powers are causing everything metallic in the room to fly around her.
She has no face anymore.
No, not at all. Not at all. She's kept her red hair, though. That's nice.
Yeah. So, anyone who engages with her would be staring at her chest if they look her in the eye. So
They would indeed. That's got to be a little bit awkward.
Yeah, and she couldn't really say, my eyes are up here, because her eyes aren't.
Well played, sir. So Rhea tells the chief that she feels fine, and meanwhile he's commenting on her appearance, saying that some would regard it as a little disconcerting. Yeah, just a little bit. Rhea goes on to explain that she can't stay. She needs to go and check on some things, and that she's, as of now, wired into the quote-unquote nervous system of the world. She can sense things are going
Richard
on.
Richard Case is doing some interesting things with the art here. There's sort of the shadows on Rhea and...
Yeah, I think it was a way to kind of give her a little bit of dignity, maybe, as she's wandering around in the nude. As, you know, especially, that's why I found your comment before, earlier, that they wanted this to be a jumping on point for people, because not exactly you reader friendly that much.
Yeah. I mean, while she is nude, it's not salacious. It's,
no, not at all. No. Not at all. And also, I don't know whether she's got a second eye or whether the giant eye in her chest moves around, because she's also got the eye in her back.
The small of her back.
Mm.
Yeah. That's
very strange.
But I mean, the way she's sort of posing in the air reminds you of sort of the birth of Venus.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. With the red hair flowing everywhere and...
True.
Yeah.
Mm. Elsewhere in Doom Patrol headquarters, young Dorothy is serving tea and coffee to the survivors of the attack on Danny the Street, and she's confronted by Danny's friend Sarah Furness and Flex Mantello as well. They're both all fired up. They're both demanding that they want to see Niles. And as they become more insistent, Crazy Jane steps in and helps out by shrieking, "Why don't you irritating bastards shut up for a minute?" So Dorothy and Jane are able to bond over that nice little moment, because Flex and Sarah do shut up. So we then have a cutaway scene back to the bizarre-looking aliens we saw briefly in issues 35 or 36, which we discussed previously. They're heading towards Earth in their giant spaceship, and they're talking about they're worrying about failing their mission. And, yeah, I really like the design of these aliens, because they look like...
Really cool.
A plank of wood with a white ball and spider's webs and nun's robes. It's really different.
There's a great picture of them on the cover of this issue.
Mm.
I think it's, you know, it's a really cool cover.
It's a fantastic cover, yeah. So we cut back to the patrol, and the chief is asking Rhea about what caused her to change. And the last thing she really, really remembers at all is a man with a knife, which would be Red Jack.
Red Jack.
From way back. When we last discussed that.
Issue 25, 24? No, earlier than that.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
She then mentions that, all she remembers is a man with a knife, and suddenly she decides to fly off to visit a circus that she can apparently hear. Apparently she can hear circus music somewhere. So, of course, the team decide to race off to find her, get her back to the headquarters. And we cut away to Rhea walking around a circus where she's recognized by a ringleader. And he seems to remember her as being Rena the Amazon Girl.
Mm.
Her being, you know, apparently a young girl, but really, really strong at the same time.
Well, that is the name she went under in her circus days.
Yes. So Jane, Cliff and Rebus, they also arrive at this spooky-looking circus. And they ask what appears to be a strong man. If he's seen Rhea, he actually comments that he's a dwarf, even though he's 6 foot plus. And Click is not convinced about that at all.
Yeah.
So the unhelpful strongman, he wanders off, and Rebus warns that he can sense that there is nothing living within the circus, nothing at all.
It's empty.
It's empty, or is it though? That's a weird thing. So Jane peeks into a crowded tent and finds a ringleader who's introducing the Siamese aerialist Romulus and Remus, whose performance is now so refined it's purely conceptual. So you have the two artists just sort of sitting there and and using their facial expressions kind of give away what they imagine they're performing. That's a little bit different. So our heroes, they agree to split up to try and improve their chances of finding Rhea. Rebus comes across a ringleader who invites them into something called the Grotto of the Grotesque. And Rebus is introduced to interesting characters such as Caesarina, the albino somnambulist, the invisible ape boy, the amazing bearded man, the girl of glass.
It's just a dude with a beard. Bearded man.
It's an amazing beard, though. Rebus finally meets the bountiful babushka, who apparently gives birth to a scaled-down perfect replica of herself every 9 months.
And that's like the Russian dolls that he had in his room.
We cut away to see Rhea in a crazy mirrored hall where the mirrors show past versions of herself and the voices are actually calling out to her, "Come with us, Rhea, come with us." So things are starting to get really, really weird now. Jane meets up with a fortune teller who, after confusing a seam in Jane's glove for a lifeline in her hand, you know, innocent mistake, the fortune teller offers Jane a view of something called the Living Tarot, which turns out to be a tarot, like, not one that we would be used to. It has things like Trump 23, the key reversed, the Nine of Wounds, and the Prince of Wheels. And they seem to actually have like human people there displaying these tarot readings. The Prince of Wheels appears to be some sort of leather-clad bikey dude. And the Nine of Wounds is a man with all sort of knives and swords stabbed through his body. So... That's been interesting. Cliff is wandering past a shooting range out in the front of the circus. The shooting range has famous assassination victims as a target, such as certain Kennedy family members and John Lennon. He also sees a clockwork man display. And it's at this point when he starts, you know, asking what the hell's going on, Jane realizes that the circus folk are just stalling them all. And we have a very brief cutaway to some shadowy figures watching the team. And these figures decide that they have to leave now that they have the lodestone. And the circus begins to collapse in on itself and disappear from reality to the point where Cliff and Jane are left standing in an empty area.
And lodestone was Rhea's superhero name.
It was. Interesting that. Yeah. So as Cliff and Jane are standing there, realizing that the circus has vanished along with Rhea and Rebus, the bizarre aliens that we saw earlier just magically appear on the planet. And Cliff's response is, "Holy shit." And that's the end of that issue.
Yeah.
What did you think of that one, Paul?
There is a lot of weirdness, which doesn't really have any point.
Yes.
Apart from being, you know, interesting. Like, yes. You know, there's a bit of humour in the circus and, you know, the way the amazing bearded man and the dwarf who's actually a big bloke.
It's all basically a lot of really interesting imagery, but there's not much payoff to a lot of it. Yeah.
But all of it was just a snare to get Rhea and grab her.
I think it was a fun issue. It was certainly very different. And that's why I'm still surprised that it was apparently a push to get more readers in. Because, if you were a new reader coming into the Doom Patrol for the first time, and even with that really well-written recap page, and I'm talking it's a page... It's full of text. even with all that, I think you would still be really confused by what was going on in this issue.
Yeah. Yeah, but you'd get the hang of it, I think. And, I mean, to be fair, Doom Patrol was like nothing else at the time.
True, this is true. Yeah.
Yes, but, I mean, this is all before Vertigo was launched.
Yes.
But Doom Patrol was certainly a very important part of Vertigo at the start of it.
They were.
Mm.
They were.
Yeah, no, I like this issue. But it is just getting us from point A to point B, which is...
In a very Morrison fashion.
Yep. But certainly there's a lot of challenging stuff for Richard Case to draw.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And I do like Jane's new outfit.
Yeah, she looks pretty snazzy with her hat and her gloves and... I love when she meets the tarot, the fortune teller, and she's like, oh, that's a very nice long lifeline that you have there. It goes all the way around. And Jane says, it's a seam. I'm wearing gloves. Yeah. That was cool. Yeah. Jane was really cool in this story.
Yeah. And it's interesting at the very start where Cliff and the chief are talking, and Cliff is complaining that they never get to, stop a bank robbery or foil a criminal mastermind. Yeah. And Chief says, nonsense, Cliff. It's essential that we leave such feeble-minded pursuits to the muscle-bound cretins who enjoy them. Our work is far more important.
So, you know, very humble in his vocation there.
It's so Chief, isn't it? Mm, yeah, but basically, yeah, no, we're not going to do the normal stuff. No. Leave that to the idiots.
Yeah.
All righto. Yeah. Shall we move on to issue 38?
Let's do it.
Okay. So this starts with a prologue, which is about a flight of planes in 1945, leaving Fort Lauderdale and encountering something. And they can't see land and they go missing. Mm. And there's a bit of... apparently one of the pilots didn't want to fly that day because he saw something weird in the clouds that morning. And then there's, you know, other times in history where people saw... premonitions in the clouds that spoke of their horrible fates, such as some soldiers who were attacked by Indians and Charles I, who was executed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was a psychic who's shown in a very The Exorcist style tribute panel. Basically, he was in a room and there was some silver sugar tongs that when you place them on a table in a certain way made everything sort of act mysteriously, like things would spin and move. And he left a recording device in the room and he basically heard the pilots on the tape when it was played back.
Mm.
And then we see that the sugar tongs passed in 1968 into the hands of a student named Wallace Sage. And then he received a phone call and told to wrap them in green felt and bring them to an unknown location. And then his mum got a phone call that wasn't a normal sort of ring. And it was Wallace who was basically talking about the ant farm. And then we get lots of just from the anonymous narrator saying, what happened to the men of Flight 19? Where was Wallace Sage calling from on that night in 1968? Why is the Pentagon the shape it is? And who are the men who never sleep? Everything is strange. A terrible telephone rings in an empty room. Mean, but that's just a setup for an upcoming story.
Mm. Yeah, a bit of a head scratcher, those few pages. Like, what?
Yeah. So when Rhea was grabbed at the circus, they also grabbed Rebus because they thought he would be useful in their war. So apparently there's aliens at war and he's in a sort of idea space with lots of interesting shapes and objects sort of swirling around him. And he asks where Rhea is and he's told that the lodestone is safe. And then he has to sort of grasp the realities of what they're doing. And he's saying, where are we traveling? He's going, we're not traveling. There's no space. There's no movement. We bring objects to us. And there's lots of talk of different plagues, like the space plague. And, these people are in conflict with someone called the anathematicians. So it's all very weird. And they talk about how they mold reality. So there's a little Statue of Liberty that gets molded into this syringe full of pink liquid. And then it's a space fix. And Rebus is quite happy to have it injected into him.
I'm guessing it's something to help Rebus acclimatize to what's going on. Even though it makes him a bit wonky at first, but yeah, he seems to get a bit better afterwards. But yeah, space fix, of course.
Space fix, yes. So that helps him adapt. But all this time he's being told stories about the conflict and the way there was the silence plague, which robbed everybody of words, and then there was the space plague, which took away people's space. So people sort of collapsed in on themselves. All sorts of weird stuff going on. Yeah, and he says, when do we arrive? And he's told, already here. And then we see the other aliens, which is the ones who arrived, and when Cliff said, holy shit, they've got Jane and Cliff and Chief.
Mm.
They're giving their side of this conflict, and they are emissaries of the Orthodoxy, and they came to locate and neutralize the pupa, which is Rhea. But unfortunately, the Hussite geomancers, the kaleidoscope, preempted us. So, the kaleidoscape.
Of course.
Yes, and it's all to attack the Judge Rock. And anyway, so they get their side of the war, which is the enemies are the Ultraquist geomancers, and they refuse to accept the sanctity of the pheromone communion. And they tried to succeed from the Orthodoxy. And it's a lot of blah, 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 really.
Basically, there's been a war for several thousand years.
Yes, and it has all sorts of weird types of conflict, like the Blink Wars, where the telepaths commune together and think about all the negative thoughts they've got and then unleash them all in a broadcast, and which would destroy entire cities and et cetera. There was my favourite one is the War of Nerves, where both sides ignored each other. It's a great shot of the aliens sitting there having tea.
Having tea, yes. Each side would ignore the other in attempt to irritate the enemy into submission.
And Josh has been brought along, but he's really not an active participant in this, is he?
Josh appears in one panel.
Yeah.
See, I have a funny feeling they're actually at Doom Patrol headquarters at this stage.
Yeah.
Because we don't see... I'm sure we don't see Chief or Josh again in this story. So
right.
It is a little bit... with everything going on in this story...
Yeah, well, you're just bombarded by these weird concepts and, you know, very elaborate descriptions of different things.
Yeah, and the art's just... insane. It's really good, but it's insane what's going on. So to see Josh pop up in one panel in the background and not say anything and then vanish, you're like, where are we again?
And then we cut back to where Rebus is and the alien there who's... the aliens look kind of angular and made out of clay, don't they? Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. He meets their leader, who is Huss, and Huss is there with Rhea, and he says, the Ouroboros, which is what they call Rebus, which is, I think, a description of the snake eating the tail.
Yes, it is, yes.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting description
for
Rebus. Hmm.
Yeah, but the snake eating the tail is sort of a representation of... something becoming united with its negative and positive sides. So that kind of fits with Rebus, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just interesting that aliens would use a a human word for it, but it works. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's no real explanations of language or anything, and, you know, everything is so conceptual in this that you've just presumed that everyone just understands everyone because they want it to be that way.
And space fix, of course.
Yeah, space fix, yeah. Yeah, but Huss has an interesting way of talking because he says, you know, I hope, stroke, expect you two will join us and things like that.
Mm. Yeah, so everything, it's as if when you were typing it out, you would type a word, then the slash, then the next word. Yeah.
Yeah, yes, but, you know, their plan is to use Rhea to bring down the Judge Rock. And Rhea is very nonplussed by this and basically, you know, he says... you know, if you don't support us, things could be bad. And he talks about some of the threats that are out there, like the glass swarms, the blue fevers, the smoke dogs, which are dogs that have nothing but sense of smell and teeth. And basically they can hunt you through time as well as space.
Mm.
Yeah. And, you know, Rhea's like, I'm not afraid of your dogs. I'll leave any time I want to. La la la. You know, and while they're talking, one of the character who brought Rebus into the room to meet Huss starts twitching and then sort of basically explodes, and like a spider body starts coming out of her.
Mm.
And Huss says this is an attack stroke assault by the mesh, and a minor manipulation of the kaleidoscope should suffice. And he basically does some sort of attack on this the body as the sort of spider legs burst out of it.
Mm.
And it collapses, and he said, we've just got to ignore it. It encourages them if you show interest or curiosity.
Yeah, apparently the insect mesh can lay their eggs telepathically and insert them in their enemy's spinal column. Of course. Of course they can.
Yeah. Meanwhile, okay, yeah, we do have Cliff and Jane leaving Earth. So they're up in the mesh spaceship and looking down on Earth. Jane's excited because she can see Australia. Yay!
Hi, Jane. Yeah. Thanks for the shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, back in the kaleidoscape, got to get the hang of all these words in this one. Yeah. Huss is leading them through and saying, you know, the war has many stages. We must enter the zones. Basically, the zones is where our... Basically, they did psychic projections that got them to fight. So basically, everyone stepped back from the war, but their psyches got involved in fighting. So there's the zone of dismay, the zone of transparent things, the zone of squandered potential, the zone of words that kill. And in the midst of all these zones is the Judge Rock, which is a... It's like a giant rock with lots of faces on it. It looks like the one in Zardoz, actually. Do you remember Zardoz?
No.
No. It's a really bad 1970s film starring Sean Connery.
I think I've seen images of Connery in it. Is that with like the red mankini thing and he's holding a gun?
Yeah, he's like wearing an outfit made of straps.
I've seen that image. I haven't seen anything else.
Yeah. Anyway, so in that, if I remember correctly, there's, yes... The quest for Zardoz turned out to be a bit of a furphy at the end of it all.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway. Thanks for the apparently inside the Judge Rock, as Huss explains, is a flower encased in glass. No one has ever dared look at it. And so the members of the Doom Patrol there are kind of like, all these years of terrible destruction for a flower no one has ever seen? And he said, oh yes, this flower is all that remains of the primal tree of knowledge, stroke ignorance. So I want he wants Rhea to bring down the Judge Rock and destroy it, and then we can claim the flower.
Mm.
And Rhea's like, oh, yeah, sounds neat.
Yeah, no problem. Sounds good. Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're still traveling, the other part of the Doom Patrol, Cliff and Jane, and they see how they travel as one of the mesh aliens gets webbed up and this... web that basically consumes them, and they can't do anything without a sacrifice. And Cliff is warned not to get too close or he'll get caught up in it. And then that they see that they've arrived and they're told, welcome to the insect mesh.
And that's a creepy looking place they've just landed at.
Yeah, so it's all sort of spiky towers inside a great big cavern. Man, there's a lot going on in this.
Just a bit, yeah. Yeah. What did you think of it, though?
Well, it's more interesting stuff. I mean, you can't fault Morrison on his lack of imagination at any point. Yeah, maybe too much imagination at some of this point.
Yeah, as you say, there's a lot going on in this, and a lot of crazy ideas, and... The team's split up and they've been put on opposite sides of this war, which is apparently all faith-based, and you know, one of the faiths is based purely on this, you know, flower that from this tree of knowledge or possibly ignorance. And it's interesting that Huss wants to capture that in order to do something different in this war that never seems to end. And sort of make a name for himself by having this happen and not just have the cycle of war continue as it has done for so many thousands of years. So I found that interesting. But yeah, it's a lot of wild stuff in here. I don't know how Richard Case coped with whatever notes Morrison gave him at the time, or whether Morrison just said, go nuts, do what you want.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's obviously some descriptions of things.
Mm.
Interesting with these two issues, Simon Bisley's the cover artist, but he seemed to be on the same page artistically with these covers, because the first one had the insect mesh aliens, which mm-hmm. is the ones with the sort of white orb in the middle of their plank face.
Yes.
And the second one is the smoke dogs, so a whole bunch of smoke dogs charging around, which is very Simon Bisley looking.
Yeah. As you said, basically fangs and nose, and that's it.
Yeah. So great covers.
Mm. The prologue at the start, again, it seems to be stuff that looks kind of important but doesn't really go anywhere. And, you know, I remember reading this and thinking, when does that stuff come into it? And I remember thinking, I hope it doesn't come in for a while because of so much of all the other stuff that we had to just read through and try and make sense of in the main story itself. That was just crazy.
I think that all comes in at the next story arc, which is starting in issue 41.
Which we will get to, but this is really lost in space, as issue 38 is called. It's just so out there.
But, I mean, it's interesting because the Doom Patrol have basically been drawn into this alien war. And, you know, that brings to mind, like, the Kree-Skrull War. And this is nothing like that.
Not at all. Not at all.
Like, these aliens very much are alien. Their world, their reality, their ideas, the way they fight is, you know, not like anything else that we've seen in comics before. No. Well, that I've seen in comics before this point.
No, you're right. It's completely different in terms of your typical outer space warfare saga. But I do find it interesting that while Huss is trying to, you know, get Rhea and Rebus on side and get them to be allies in their side of the war, Rebus just flat out says, you know, it's not our war. We're not soldiers. He's just basically traveling along to make sure that Rhea is okay and he can help rescue Rhea. But Rhea seems very blasé about the whole thing. She's like, yeah, I'm not worried about your dogs, and sure, I'll go and steal your flower for you and destroy this gigantic floating city temple three-faced thing called the Judge Rock. Yeah, she seems fine with it all.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, there's a lot of entertaining nonsense in these two issues, I would say.
Again, I'm still surprised by the push for this to be a jump-on story. I find that fascinating because I suppose if they had, you know, made it clear that Doom Patrol isn't your average superhero book, new readers should be okay with it. But man, it's so full of stuff that they just have to get through.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the point where the Doom Patrol gets heavy.
Yeah. I was just thinking that I think in this storyline, this is when Morrison ramps it right up.
Yeah.
And just cranks it into overdrive and just lets fly with whatever it is he's got bubbling away in the background there.
Yeah, I mean, and if they'd thought about it and been organised earlier, I mean, the painting that ate Paris is probably a much better jumping on point than this one.
Yeah, I think that's a bit more, even though that's still pretty out there, it's pretty bizarre, I think that's much easier for people to get into. I mean, when we discussed that storyline, we had our friend Jessica Boyd joining us for that episode, and she loved it. She got right into it, and that was one of the first Doom Patrol stories she's read. She sort of just came in, you know, around that era. So, yeah. It'll be interesting to see if we get any of our listeners say that they're reading this story as, you know, a newish Doom Patrol thing for themselves, and to hear what they think of it as well.
Yeah.
So, So get in touch if that's you, dear listeners.
Yeah. Okay. I guess we didn't really say when these issues came out, did we?
We said when 37 came out.
Okay, 38 came out on September 25th, 1990.
Wow.
So that was 25 years ago.
Holy jeez.
Golly.
Good grief.
Yeah, makes me feel old.
It makes me feel old too. God, yeah. I would have been, young.
You would have been in your 30s then.
No. Good God. I would have been 15. Yeah. Close, but yeah. Good thing it's not a math podcast. Dear me.
Alrighty. Oh, I think we've doomsplained that one. Now, there's two more issues in this story arc, but it's so dense we really wanted to split it up.
Yeah.
We are but humans.
Yeah, we can only do so much. We're good, but we're not that good.
Cool. Okay. Doomsplaining done.
Awesome. Go team.
Mailbag of Doom time. Now, last week we asked everyone who has the best silhouette in comics. So, did we get some answers? We did get some answers.
Sure did.
Okay. First person was Moby One. And he said, hard to go past bats, especially the iconic Dark Knight Returns silhouette cover. But he also added silhouette from the Minutemen, may disagree, and popped in a picture of silhouette from, who was one of the heroes in Watchmen.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, now I get that joke. Jay Bandoy at W Bandoy on Twitter. He said the obvious answer is it Batman? All he could think of. Lol, but it puts fear in the hearts of criminals, plus the bat signal.
So, true. Yeah. Very iconic, easy to spot in silhouette. Ange had he said, easy peasy, the only one answer, hat, Roman nose, guns, the shadow. Very distinctive.
Very much so. Kate at Katie Scarlet 94, she responded with, you mean Dick's glorious behind, right? That she has to be talking about Dick Grayson. I'm not sure if a butt really has much of a silhouette.
Your mileage may vary.
Yes. Silhouettes and glorious behinds are in the eye of the beholder, clearly.
Evil Tick Meter Wank at Abstracts 1 said, Dr. Ange is right, without a doubt. It's the shadow. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of those who disagree with this answer?
Uh-oh. We also heard from Parakeith Activity at Cub Reporter K on Twitter, and he said, I'd like to pretend it's someone besides Batman, but we all know it's Batman.
Good answer. Karthik Karkarella, who's known as the Articulate Brown Man at the moment, says, it's got to be Judge Dredd though, right? It's in his classic form, even the barest outline makes it very clear what's about to happen.
Yes. We heard from Mike Lapine at Lapine Is Me, and his answer was a drawing of Judge Dredd that Mike had done. Which was a cool answer.
Another booster for Judge Dredd. Okay, we also heard from Rift 1821. Batman would have to be the classic, but if something the size of Juggernaut, Hulk, or Wendigo came up behind me, I'd pee a little.
Oh dear, that's too much info, Riffy. We finally heard from Martin Gray at Mart Gray, and he said, I would say Phoenix, but I'm not sure the fire wings make a silhouette. So, Crypto.
Crypto. Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting answer. What about you, Paul?
I think Keith is right. I can't go past Batman.
Yeah, I'm possibly biased, and it's possibly because of all the detective comics I've been reading, but when when that silhouette of Batman appears over a group of criminals, you know that they're in so much trouble.
Yeah, and particularly when I think of Batman silhouette, I think of Norm Brayfogle art, and you're smack dab in the middle of that stuff right now.
Yeah, it's great stuff. So I think we're all agreed it is indeed Batman. Thanks, Keith.
Wish it wasn't. I wish there was someone with a more...
Well, look, when you get into comics writing, you can create someone that's got an even better silhouette.
Yeah.
There you go. Something to aim for.
Something to aim for, indeed.
Oh, dear. Okay, so that's it for the Mailbag of Doom this week, and also our show for this week. So if you want to reach us, you can talk to us via our friend Wilfred on Twitter at WFTPod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can also check us out on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page and Tumblr page as well.
Yeah.
So, Paul, what do you think we'll be talking about on next week's show?
Doom Patrol. Doom Patrol, definitely.
Right. Anything more specific than that?
Possibly issues of the Doom Patrol.
Right. Okay. Good to know. And do we have a question of the week for next week?
Yeah. What comic-related thing brings you the most happiness right now?
Okay, so not an actual comic itself.
It could be a comic.
Oh, it could be a comic.
It could be a comic-related thing.
Right.
Could be. Yeah. Could be something that looks like a comic. It isn't. I don't know.
Right. Let's stick with comic-related thing.
It could be a character.
Okay.
Could be an old comic, could be a new comic, could be a catalogue of comics.
Right. It could be socks with a character's logo on them.
It could be a t-shirt even.
It could be underpants.
Could be underpants.
I love how we just both went there.
Yeah. Socks, t-shirt, underpants is the next.
Something that's, yes, related to comics that brings you the most happiness right now.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be clothing, but if it is, keep it clean, kids.
Could be food.
Food. Okay, what comics-related food is out there, Paul?
My wife got me a really cool comic-related birthday cake for my 40th.
Ah, okay. Yeah, all right.
It had, like, Hellboy on it.
Ooh, fancy.
It was fancy.
Very fancy. God, you'll have to show some pics of that.
I think they're pre-iPhone. I'd have to find them.
Wow. Anyway. So way back
Hang on,
when.
That makes me old. Shit.
Oh, dear. On that note, we'll sign off for now. Thanks for listening, guys. We will catch you again next time.
Bye.